and gentlemen, welcome. This is Alexander Malaket. I'm the president of Opus Advisory Services International. We welcome you again to this latest episode of Spotlight Trade Finance, our second in the series of podcast episodes focused exclusively on international trade finance and featuring the insights and points of view of senior executives and leaders in our industry across the globe. I'm delighted to have with us today Elizabeth Atkins, Executive Vice President, Head of Sales, Global Banking at Wells Fargo in San Francisco, and Mr. John McQuaid, Global Head of Supply Chain Management Group at BNP Paribas in Paris. Elizabeth and John, welcome. Delighted to have you both with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, in terms of the format of the podcast today, we'll go over that briefly in a moment, but may I ask each of you, Elizabeth, starting with you, to please introduce yourself and your institutions for our listeners.
Hi, yes, I'm Elizabeth Atkins, and I'm with Wells Fargo, and I'm responsible for all of the sales in our international global banking group. And we are, one of our primary objectives of our organization is to help our customers succeed as they do business around the globe. And to that end, we provide a whole suite of services, trade finance services, structured trade finance, supply chain finance, trade processing as well. So full suite of services to help our customers succeed.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth, and welcome. John.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is John McQuaid. I'm the Global Head of Supply Chain for BNP Paribas, based in Paris. We are part of what we call Global Trade Solutions, which offers, as the name suggests, trade solutions, be it flow banking, in terms of letters of credit, bank guarantees, performance bonds, and my particular area is supply chain, offering solutions on receivables, payables, and inventory management. And whilst we are headquartered in Paris, we have major centers in New York and Singapore.
John, thank you very much and welcome as well. Ladies and gentlemen, in terms of today's episode, what we'll do is highlight a couple of points around supply chain finance as an outgrowth of traditional trade finance. And initially, I think what we'd like to do is start with a brief, at least, definition or outline of what is understood by supply chain finance in each of our guest institutions, and then some discussion of the relationship between trade finance in the traditional sense and the supply chain finance programs and models that have been emerging over the last couple of years. And then, ideally, a discussion, maybe a little bit interactively, about the state of the supply chain finance market in terms of programs that are available, in terms of onboarding or signing on various client types, perhaps some discussion of the technology related to this whole area, and any other insights that our panelists care to share with us today. And then finally, what we'll do is continue with our approach of having each panelist share one key resource and one unique or interesting insight that they might have on supply chain finance or more broadly on international trade finance. So I guess at this point, let's get right into the matter, the main topics of discussion for today, and I'll ask John maybe if you could start us off with your sense of what supply chain finance means in the market today and certainly what it means from BNP's perspective, please.
From a BNP perspective, we define supply chain as optimization of working capital for our clients. So any banking product that is designed to reduce costs and risk throughout the supply chain, be that receivables, payables, or inventory, and on a global basis. So that's how we see it, and it is a subpart of trade finance.
Ah, okay, it's interesting that you made that distinction. I was going to ask about that a bit later in the podcast. Two things struck me. One is that you've mentioned both the cost dimension and the risk dimension. My sense had been that certainly pre-crisis, from a trade finance perspective, we might have lost sight of the risk component of the value proposition a little bit, and that it has been brought back into focus. The other piece is that you've positioned supply chain finance as a subset of trade finance, and I'd like to come back to that in a moment, if I may. Elizabeth, could I turn it over to you to share with us your definitions of supply chain finance as it stands at the moment?
Yeah, certainly. So I would look at supply chain finance as either on the import or the export side, working with our customers along their entire trade cycle. So that starts at PO issuance and ends at final payment, be they an exporter or an importer. So you've got the financing along the way as well as the risk management along the way. So I think we're looking here at a broader perspective from PO to final payment.
Which is the whole sort of procure to pay in order to cash cycle that people refer to quite a bit.
We call it the trade cycle here, yes.
Okay, perfect, understood. So you've both highlighted the fact that we've brought the risk discussion back into the space of trade finance. My reference a moment ago was to the fact that we had, and certainly in pre-crisis days, shifted very much to open account transactions and had perhaps, if I use the expression, discounted the focus on risk mitigation and risk management solutions and aspects of trade finance. Do you share that perspective, that we've kind of come back around to a bit more focus on risk at this point? And perhaps John could start us with that, yeah.
Sorry. Well, I'm not sure there's been a fundamental change. A lot of the clients that we would have been dealing with, obviously sale of receivables, extension of payables, but primarily sale of receivables, was obviously a liquidity issue. But behind that was always a risk element. In the same way that banks have risk limits on their clients, certainly the corporate clients I'm working with have always had a risk limit as well on their clients in exactly the same way. But you are correct, over the last 2 years, the financial crisis has certainly focused people's view in the corporate world on risk mitigation. So we're now seeing people who not only want to sell receivables, but effectively want to sell the risk, maybe not on a funded basis, so a subpart of insurance, an alternate to insurance.
Right, and both the export credit agencies and the private insurers have taken significant roles, certainly over the course of the crisis, in that risk mitigation dimension.
They certainly have, yes.
Elizabeth, how are things looking from the North American perspective on that discussion?
Yeah, I agree with what John has said, and I think also we're seeing a greater increase on focus on risk from some of our customers, especially we're seeing about the import and the export side, but on the buy side, large importers are looking farther up the chain. They're looking at the point where we're seeing a lot of vendors request not only move from open account to LC terms, but also trying to find means to get pre-shipment finance for themselves. And that creates a new dynamic for our importing customers, as an example, in trying to figure out how to support their vendors and their vendors' needs, yet not taking on additional risk themselves.
That would be an interesting tie-in to the whole discussion of how you bring clients aboard onto these supply chain finance programs. Before we go down that path, I'd like to, if I may, explore just this positioning of supply chain finance relative to trade finance or traditional trade finance. And I heard John say that supply chain finance is being positioned as a subset of the trade finance business at BNP. Is there some kind of an organizational relationship within Wells between those two? I don't know if I should call them lines of business or areas of focus, but is there some kind of an organizational distinction between those two?
We try to. There's a slight organizational distinction, but what we try to do, we do have a supply chain finance group that focuses on the kind of the tail end, the segment that John is describing there. But we also have another division within our organization that is very focused on talking about supply chain in the broader context. Let's talk from the very beginning of your transaction and see how we can help you as an institution from the very start of your financial supply chain. And so I think it's important that when we're engaging with our clients that we take that discussion a little bit more broadly. And that's something we as an institution have made a large effort to do. So we've extended that definition of supply chain when we're speaking with our customers.
Okay, interesting distinction. And in fact, that leads us nicely to this discussion of how we bring clients aboard. But before we get into that, I wouldn't mind if we explored for a moment your perceptions respectively of how is the market reacting today to this notion of supply chain finance? Certainly supply chain management in terms of logistics and procurement is very familiar and a well-established line of activity within commercial and corporate clients. Is the market becoming more aware or conscious of this whole supply chain finance space? And what's the level of the discussion that you're encountering in the marketplace today in those? And maybe we could give John a start on that.
Okay, well, I think supply chain is now a core topic for the vast majority of our clients, be it in the US, in Europe, and indeed today in Asia itself. If you look at the types of clients who are involved, they are all what we used to call the Fortune 500 type clients. They are top-rated corporates, and they have recognized, be it through disintermediation of their supply chain, extension of supply chain, the financial crisis, I think, especially has helped focus the reliability of that supply chain. So having squeezed the last cent out of supply chain can have a very negative effect if your suppliers go bankrupt or can't supply. So I think it is very much a core topic and not something that's done on the periphery anymore, but at a CFO level, treasurer level, and most importantly now at purchasing logistics level as well.
And indeed, you anticipated my question about the level of the discussion, so it definitely reaching the C-suite. Elizabeth, what are you finding?
I agree very much with what John has said. There are 10 years ago, this was supply chain was quite the buzzword and the new topic, and something it's something different to be talking to your clients about. It's very rare that we speak to someone today that hasn't already thought about these issues and these challenges, and looked at strategies for addressing them.
And yet the reality, at least in some discussions, certainly that I'm a party to, is that there is a bit of a challenge in some cases in attracting clients to a supply chain program. It's referred to in our industry as the onboarding challenge. And I think, Elizabeth, you alluded to it in terms of your approach with the large import retailers and how you bring them aboard. There is certainly some concern, from what I understand, about this from the perspective of the commercial sort of SME mid-market supplier that has concerns about exposing their financial situation to the large anchor client in a bid to secure financing through that supply chain. What's your respective perceptions, and this time maybe I'll start with Elizabeth, in terms of that whole collaborative dynamic within the supply chain and how easy it is or challenging it is to get corporates and commercial clients to actually sign on to these programs?
Yeah, I think one of the single biggest challenge we face in implementing and successfully executing a supply chain finance program is making sure we have complete buy-in at the company. And so this can be one of the challenges because a lot of the solutions, whichever point they start at, whether they start at the PO or they start at the payment and the financing at the end, a lot of these solutions require an investment in IT, an investment in resources and time on behalf of the company to make them work. And so while you may have, we found in many cases, you may have a CFO that's very supportive and very engaged in this type of a process or a program, yet if you don't have the head buyer or the head of merchandising or whatever that title may be on the buy side, managing those vendor relationships, if you don't have agreement, it's going to be very difficult to execute on one of these programs within the company. And so that's what we find is the single biggest challenge is making sure there are alignments within our customers as to how they want to go forward and how they want to execute upon these strategies. If we don't have that, and we're actually getting pretty tough about when we look at a customer as to whether we want to move forward or how far we want to push the program, if we don't have that buy-in, we realize we're going to be spinning our wheels for some time.
I was in a discussion late last year, with some bankers in Europe, and one of the issues that they brought to the table in terms of this whole program launching challenge was very much this whole thing about how do you bring the various constituents within the client organization to the table. And one banker in particular said, look, these guys had never spoken among themselves, and they got together and started to think about these issues because we brought them in the context of this kind of programmatic discussion. John, what's your take on this whole question of the onboarding and building that program within your client base?
Well, I think you really covered the main points there. Supply chain for a long time was a treasurer's responsibility, and any treasurer can see the logic of supply chain solutions very, very quickly. What has not happened enough before, but it's happening much more, when the treasurer is talking to a banker on supply chain, first he must understand how his own company works, because it's often quite surprising the view of a treasurer on how his company works versus the reality of how it works. But they must involve, the CFO must approve it first of all, but if they don't involve the purchasing guys, the sales guys, the logistics guys, then the deals aren't going to work because you're hitting up against different people's KPIs, and what's good for the treasurer may not be good for the sales guy or the purchasing guy. So within their group, they have to come to a consensus that this is good overall for the company, and if necessary, they change the way they measure themselves. But as Elizabeth said right at the beginning, unless everybody is involved, you won't get these large payable deals to work. You won't get the people on board. You won't get the receivables programs working. So I would fully agree with what she said.
In that fundamental respect, you're certainly both in alignment. And in fact, your comments, John, about this whole question of metrics and how you measure success and how you align the way people measure performance and results and KPIs or key performance indicators, some of the thought leadership in this space is trying to take from supply chain management disciplines and apply some of that metrics logic to the finance side of the equation, which is perhaps a topic for a future podcast. I very much appreciate both of you agreeing to join us today, and I want to be respectful of the time that you've agreed to commit to this. Maybe we could explore one more quick thought around this whole supply chain finance space before we get into the closing one resource, one insight bit that we do at the end of these podcasts, and that's the state of the technology around supply chain finance. And I guess I'd like to tie that to the question of, or a way of reinforcing that, in fact, supply chain finance has clearly shifted from the drawing board or the theoretical side of things to being something very practical, very implementation-oriented, and hopefully, depending on your respective remarks now, something that we can really point to commercial and corporate clients and say there is substantive value coming out of these programs. What's your take on the state of the enabling infrastructures and technologies around supply chain finance at the moment? And on this one, maybe Elizabeth, you could lead us off, please.
Yeah, certainly. I think the technology and the infrastructure is very well built up and very well defined. One of the challenges we do face is that, especially if we're going all the way back to the PO initiation point of the cycle, is our customers do require us, especially the larger corporates, to be fully integrated with their platforms and have full. So we're putting a lot of resources towards those the integration there. And I think that is one of the challenges, is the investment resources on IT on both ends for our customer and for ourselves. Now, one of the things that I think is going to be very interesting in this market, and the middle market and the commercial bank client is very important to us here at Wells Fargo. And one of the things I think is going to be very interesting in the future is as we look to bringing these programs where they've been typically in the large corporate and the commercial space, the large corporate space, bring them into the commercial space, down into the middle market client, and provide a technology solution that is a little bit more off the shelf. That's a technology in a box, if you will, that has several options, but does not require a complete build to be able to get our customers to that level of integration. And I think that becomes a very interesting play.
It's very consistent with that end-to-end philosophy that you articulated around the whole supply chain finance space to begin with.
Yes.
Great. John, your thoughts on the whole technology and enabling infrastructure?
Well, without the technology, we cannot really progress as far as we would like to. Be it what we call our e-banking platforms, the TSU solution, whether we can link in the TSU solution with the e-banking platform. One of the issues we have is whether people want to use our platform or they wish to use a third-party platform in order to move forward, and there are pros and cons on both of them, and certainly in BNP we are now prepared to use our own platforms, obviously, plus other platforms as well. But making it simple for the client to link in, which my IT people tell me is anything but simple, is, I believe, as Elizabeth said, a key to moving forward. And then maybe allowing, developing portals that will allow clients to come in and pick and choose, they want to use this product, that product, but not this one. So again, it becomes essential in my view that the IT will provide an easy solution. IT in itself is not the solution, but without the IT, we cannot deliver on the supply chain products.
And I'm interested to pick up on a couple of points. I mean, Elizabeth, from your perspective, this notion of bringing the middle market, which of course is a critical component of the Wells franchise, certainly in the States, bringing that middle market into the fore in terms of supply chain finance, and John, your notion of that kind of modular structure where clients can choose components that they wish to adhere to or not. So it looks like there's some familiar themes coming out in terms of the whole technology space, the whole build versus buy debate, and then the question of whether they're proprietary platforms or whether they're more generic platforms. So it'll be interesting to observe that going forward. Let me just open up a final question just to each of you. Any final thoughts or anything specific that you'd like to share around the supply chain management and supply chain finance discussion for this particular episode? And we'd, of course, be delighted to have you come back and join us in future. But any final thoughts from each of you before we do the One Resource, One Insight? And maybe, John, you could lead us off on this one.
Okay, in terms of how we should move forward, I think it's very important that our clients, both the banks and the clients, understand what it is they're trying to achieve, to recognize that there is a potential for a win-win situation, whilst recognizing the risks that are involved. We will never be able to supply, cover the entire gamut, pre-production financing, all the way through to final delivery, without understanding the risks that are involved. So I think it's essential for our industry, if it's going to work properly, that both the banks and the clients understand what the risks are involved and how you can mitigate those particular risks, and for people to recognize the reality of those risks.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I think the critical piece in all of this is that we as banks have gotten very good at post-shipment financing. We can do it on either the buyer or the seller side. We're quite good at that. It's not challenging to underwrite. So it's something we can do quite easily for our customers. I think the real nut to crack in all of this is the pre-shipment, as John referred to, the post-production, the pre-production financing phase. If we can get to the pre-shipment phase, especially on the import side with the vendors, that, I think, is where we're going to add tremendous value to our clients. We hold a trade advisory council. We bring in once a year. We bring in all of our key customers, large importing clients, into a forum to sit around the room and discuss what's important to them. And this has consistently come up as a challenge. What can we do for them on the pre-shipment side for their vendors? Now, of course, they don't want to take on the risk, right? So how can we do this without them taking on the risk? So the challenge will be to figure out how this type, we can arrange for this type of financing for our customers, for our importing clients, without placing the risk, undue risk position on the client.
And that discussion becomes more interesting when you start to think about how more and more of the supplier community, is in emerging and developing markets.
Absolutely.
So that risk profile changes significantly. Well, interesting observations from both of you. Thank you both very much. Let me ask you each, and maybe Elizabeth, I could ask you to lead us off with this one resource, one insight. So if you could identify for us one resource that you think might be particularly valuable to our listeners, and then one insight around supply chain finance that you'd care to share with us, please.
Yes, absolutely. So we just finished at Wells Fargo. We just produced a book, actually. It's around about 100-page resource on everything soup to nuts on trade and trade finance. And that's available at our website. Just go into our website and wellsfargo.com and search for international, and you can obtain a copy of the book. And it's a great resource tool. And you can get a PDF version of it. So I think it's a very helpful tool for our customers. And the other insight is, it gets kind of back to my theme on the pre-shipment finance. We have been hearing, and this has been kind of an interesting time right now, as you know, the cotton market is very tight, and cotton prices are rising, and supply is becoming tighter. And so we've been getting a lot of increased demand from our customers, our buying customers, for solutions on the pre-ship side, tied into the fact that their vendors very early on are having to confirm or pay for purchases of cotton, the raw material going into the production of the apparel. So we're getting a lot of requests for this, and I think this, again, in my mind, emphasizes that where we need to be focused is on the pre-shipment side of the piece of the transaction, for mapping that out for our customers. So this has been a unique challenge that has popped up related to cotton prices and the impact on our customers.
Thank you, Elizabeth. In fact, this whole pre-export, pre-shipment finance bit, depending on what set of statistics one was tracking over the course of the crisis, there were some estimates that suggested that the evaporation of pre-export, pre-shipment finance resulted directly in a 40% decrease in global trade flows, and particularly from Asia to Europe and the Americas, and a subsequent drastic tumble in the shipping rates that caused these sort of massive ship graveyards in Singapore and Malaysia and other ports in Asia, just these empty container vessels just waiting for some reason to come back across. And so this pre-export, pre-shipment finance discussion, I suspect, is going to be on the radar screen for some time to come. This whole notion of the cotton side as well, in terms of commodity trade, there was an event hosted by the UN in Geneva last week, beginning of the week, in fact, that dealt specifically around the whole commodity trade space. And within that, there were a couple of interesting trade finance panels which addressed a number of those sorts of supplier issues and finance access issues, particularly for emerging markets and developing markets. So certainly plenty of material for future podcasts. So thank you very much for both that Wells resource, which I'll be accessing as soon as we complete this podcast, and for the insight that you've just shared with us. Thank you, Elizabeth. John, over to you.
Okay, from in terms of allowing or enabling the clients to see what's happening in the market, I think it's important that they continue to develop their inter-corporate treasury discussions. In my previous life, when I was a corporate treasurer, we met regularly with other corporates without bankers being present. That allowed you to talk as to what was happening, what you were doing, so you weren't embarrassed by having your banker in the discussion. I have a completely different view on that now, obviously, now that I'm a banker. But I think corporate treasury meetings are important. Continue to go to your seminars and see what is being given, what is being seen. But also talk to your suppliers, talk to your customers, and see what they're doing, because if you have someone who's involved in a payables program with on their side of the shop, they may be interested in getting involved with you as a supplier or as a buyer going forward. Keep an eye as well on the government initiatives. In the UK, you have the government pushing very hard to try and help the SMEs. Here in France, strong initiatives from the French government with people like COFAS to cover export transactions. So be aware of what's going on there. And just in terms of insight, to repeat what I said earlier on, actually understand what it is and know what it is that you're trying to achieve in supply chain, and in order to make it work, involve all the people in your organization, not just at a treasury side. And just a final comment on cotton prices. It's not just cotton. We've obviously seen copper hit $10,000 just recently. I believe, as Elizabeth rightly says, pre-export financing is the holy grail. Haven't found a solution to it yet, but we're all working on it. So thank you.
Thank you, John. In fact, if I go back to one of your comments around this whole discussion among treasurers versus bankers, if I draw it explicitly to validate my own understanding, when you say you now have a completely different view, the view would be include your bankers in the discussion. Am I correct?
I think you should include the bankers to make sure that what seems a perfectly feasible view from a corporate treasurer, is it a bankable product? We all know the cotton example. It's a great idea. We need to find a way of turning that into a bankable product. How can we cover the risks? So bankers have a different view on life to corporates. They look at things from the different end of a telescope. Bring that to bear in your discussions. I think it's important.
Right, excellent. Thank you, John, as well. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much again for joining us for this latest episode of the Focus Advisory Services Spotlight Trade Finance Podcast. We are in advanced discussions on several additional episodes, and we'll have them ready and available shortly. So we invite you to join us again. Subscribe to the RSS feeds to keep updated on the posting of new podcasts on iTunes, on our websites and blogs and elsewhere. And clearly, our panel of participants, should they choose to, also have the option to post the audio of the final podcasts where they choose to do that. Elizabeth Atkins, John McQuaid, thank you both very much for joining us, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon.